Hello, good morning, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. Dave@petsofinancial.net, if you prefer email. Fascinating. I'll talk about this more in the next hour. But it's fascinating to me how negative everything is. The debt ceiling, debt default, all these things. And we head into a holiday weekend with a massive rally. Huh? How is that possible? I mean, Friday was a great day for the market. A great day. And on what news? That the PCE was a little hotter than they thought. In other words, inflation data was hotter than expected. That's not good news. That's the opposite of good news to this market. It was incredible when you think, oh, well, you know, they were talking nice and things like that, like they're going to do a deal. Well, of course, they've been talking nice like they're going to do a deal anyway. What we miss is the market doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It always makes people look foolish. Always. And I know that's not you and me. It's other people. But when we literally write down our predictions based on the facts of the day, and we are predicting what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, really soon, not like long term into the future where nobody can see clearly, we're stunningly wrong. We're stunningly wrong most of the time. I mean, a coin flip is better than human beings at figuring out the future. Why? I think it's worth contemplating. It's not just this like weird little data point. Isn't it worth contemplating why we're never right and Wall Street analysts aren't right either? CNBC all day long is wrong. More than a coin flip. Yet we fixate on it. To me, it's stunning. Okay, so I really find it amazing. And why we come back to, if you will, the Warren Buffett, the John Templetons, the Michael Prices, the greatest investors of the last 100 years. All of them. Come back to this basic thing. You can't time the market. You can't. It's not something you can time. Oh, stocks are too expensive. We all knew that heading into this year. The PE ratios were too high. Earnings were coming down. We all knew that. It was a fact. And get this. I still, it's stunning. I can't even believe the numbers. The NASDAQ is up 24% year to date. 24% gain on something that's way too expensive. Everybody knew. Earnings were coming down. Everybody knows. Had a bad year last year, of course, because, you know, growth is dead. We all knew this stuff. We all know that the debt ceiling is a big problem. But the market shrugs it off. We all know that prices are too high. Market doesn't care. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Pretty amazing of what we know and isn't true. That's the stunning thing. I just think it's amazing how wrong the market's been. I'm not the market. People have been about predicting the market this year. I mean, it reminds me of Jim Cramer. I think the market's great. I think the markets are going to jump 10%. No, I think that's terrible. Oh, my gosh. Oh, horrible. Ooh, the news is just amazingly bad. I can't believe, oh, we can't go anywhere. And we just bounce back and forth as if that's helpful. It's just insane. And we do this and expect to have clarity of what's going on. I mean, you look at this and you think, well, NVIDIA, AI. Oh, it's all because AI took off. That was that's this week, or was it last week or before? Did you predict that? Or that's the excuse for why, even though the market's so high, PE ratios are terrible, JoJo's in charge, we can't go anywhere. You know all the bad news, right? Just list it off. Inflation, Ukraine, just keep on going. That's the excuse for why the market is actually up, and you predicted it would be down, because we all did. It's not that strong, and interest rates are up a lot. It's frighteningly bizarre world we live in, and it is. And I know it's just, it reminds me a lot. I'll think of his name here. But there's this guy that just was kind of well known. He wrote the little book of investing or something like that. I mean, he was a super negative guy, which, again, people buy whatever's negative, right? I mean, you make a good case for why the world is going to end, and boom, you get to sell a million copies, right? Doesn't mean there's anything remotely true about it or probable. And they've all been proven wrong throughout history. But it works. So it shouldn't be surprising that people keep coming up with new ways that the world is going to end, and they're sure, and that's why you need to buy gold now, because it's about ready to take off. And that seems logical, too, in this time. But it reminds me of this guy who at one point in time, because he'd been wrong and wrong and wrong, and finally, like, I've almost never seen this, right? It's like asking the Fed chair, Powell, you know, why are you raising interest rate, or you continue to inflate money in the system when you say inflation is not transitory anymore? Why are you still doing that? Nobody asks. Nobody asks why you predicted 3/4-point increases, but instead you had the equivalent of 18. So why do we think you're right now? What did you miss? Nobody asked those questions, but they did this time. They said, you've been predicting gold would be at 3,000 and then 5,000 for like forever. And you haven't been right on your predictions about that or the market or what have you. What's changed now? And his answer, instead of saying, well, this is what I missed then, and my bad, was to say, it's only because people are too stupid to recognize this problem. No kidding. He wasn't wrong. You see what I mean? He wasn't wrong. He was simply saying, I'm not wrong. People are too stupid. Wow. Isn't that crazy? And we run into that all the time. We all do. We see it all the time. All the time. Fear sells. Don't touch that annuity. It ties up your money forever. It won't work. People all know that. They do it anyway. Why? Fear. It's guaranteed. It won't go down. Warren Buffett says, you've got to not never lose money. Did he really say that? I don't know that he said that. Maybe he said it in a part of a huge paragraph of understanding of the world. But that's not what Warren Buffett says, like ever. We all know that. But we buy into because we're scared. And the scare story always sounds compelling. It always does. It does. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, happily talk to you at 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and once again, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I do talk about this fear and all those things, and I can't wait to give you some of the statistics, right, that are just absolutely stunning about the market. Is it really makes me think a lot, and I talked about this a lot with Warren Buffett and his, you know, Berkshire meeting here a little while ago, and the reflection on that, and the reflection, of course, is absolutely amazing in this day and age of instant gratification, tweets about what the market's doing, and all of these, if you will, high impact, you know, machine guns blasting data and predictions at us all 24/7. And so it's very, very loud and noisy. And then you get 90-year-olds going, we never predict. We just don't. We never have, we never will predict what the market's going to do. Because you can't. He didn't say that. I'm just saying you can't. I know you think you can. I know you think that guy that you get the subscription from that you're reading is real interesting and all that. But I say this again. The NASDAQ is up 24% year to date. 24%. Everybody wrote off big tech. It was selling for too much. And finally, value stocks were going to win. Finally. They've been losers, right, until 2022. 2022, they finally did good. And they were going to keep doing good, we're told. List goes on, right? Anyway, we'll talk more about that in the next hour. This is amazing, though, to me, how much the market rallied in the face on Friday of two things. No debt deal. No debt deal. Heading into a three-day holiday. And inflation data that was very poor. Persistently high, meaning the Fed is likely to keep rates where they are and maybe even keep raising them. Not good. That was the news. And again, the NASDAQ took off. 1.6% gains for the day. Even the Dow, which has lagged in every way for the year, was up over 300 points. Interesting, isn't it? In the face of that, that's how much underlying pent-up demand there is for the great corporations of the world, and we forget that. All right, we're going to talk some more in the next hour. I hope you'll stick around. Fox News is next. Hello, good morning, and once again, thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. You know, it is stunning, and of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only, and we're not here to try to predict the future. Can't do it. Can't do it. People do. People take that as some kind of advice, even measured advice, thoughtful advice, important to hear the message. Not. When the greatest investors of the world, of history, tell you can't time the market, that they don't predict the market, what it's going to do over the next year, never have, never will. That's what they say. For 40 years, I've heard that. I've studied it, studied the great investors. Why? Because that's what you did to try to be better, to learn things. You don't just figure it out on your own. You figure it out because you watch great people. You learn from them. Great teachers, great people, great mentors, even people you've never met. You study them. You grow from them and your own mistakes. Nobody becomes that person, but we all study people, listen, think. And then we own it ourselves, right? I mean, we kind of own it ourselves. We have our own message. Some of that message, some of your own, some from somebody else, right? Mixed in. And it becomes ours. Uniquely ours, even. But for 40 years, when you hear people saying, you can't time the market, and these are the great investors, and it's a unified chorus. It's not like, well, you know, Joe Schmo, the great investor, he did time the market. I always said it was good enough for me. And that was it. It was like, why am I thinking about this anymore? And I didn't. We all think about the market. We all think about whether prices make sense and this individual stock is going to work out and great, you know, all those things are wonderful. They're all wonderful to think about. Because we have to, when we're buying individual stocks, wonder about to the extent of how that company is going to do. And this is precisely why this just struck me to the core. When Warren Buffett, a few weeks ago, made the statement that there's only been about 12 decisions that made all the difference in millions of percent returns in his investment career. Now, I know we throw around millions and billions and trillions like it's not a real number. What I'm saying is his returns, bottom line, are unreal. Destroyed the market. It's not even close, right? Okay, so just understand, it's not even close. It's millions of percent. A dollar turns into more than a million. Okay, just it's unreal. It's not just a number, it's the real number. He's had 12 decisions in 70 years that make all the difference? 12. Two of them were personnel issues. Charlie Munger. When Charlie Munger became his partner, he thought that was one of the key decisions in his life. So let's call it 10 investment decisions drove all of that. That's what he says. 10. That's so stunning. I can't really wrap my mind around it. Greatest investor of all time is wrong most of the time. He says so. His most of the time, at best, he said, his results were mediocre at best. In other words, the greatest investor of our lifetime, maybe all time, is wrong most all of the time. No home run here. Oh, I just follow Warren Buffett around. So he bought the ABC company. I'll just buy the ABC company. And most of the time, it's mediocre at best. Not a home run. Not outperforming the market. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm realizing as I'm looking and thinking about portfolios and all those things and stocks you buy, why do you buy them? Is it for yield, growth of yield? Just growth. But isn't it true that most all of your returns come from a couple of home runs that you owned? You didn't trade. You owned. Here's more truth. You don't know what your own investment results are because you don't look. You don't actually track it. You don't actually find out how many are home runs, what your actual overall results are. People don't. Sounds a lot like a gambler at the casino that seems to get lots of jackpots, and that's what they talk about. Don't really talk about all the real results. We don't measure. But you know what? You have to when you're in the industry. You have to when you run a mutual fund. You have to have the results measured. And they're not unified. No, I mean, it's like people say, well, what are the portfolios that Petro Financial do? And they're all different. I cannot tell you. I'm not allowed to, because then I could cherry pick the guy that did 80% last year because he just happened to bring money in on the right time, blah, blah, blah. Right? Somebody came in, we bought NVIDIA last week. I mean, come on. That's why you can't. You have thousands of accounts. You can't cherry pick. But when you have a mutual fund, an exchange-traded fund, the results are there, right there, for people to see. And it is astounding when you think about it. Owning Apple, since they came out with the iPhone, has completely changed. Many, many people's investment lives. Not just the people like Tim Cook. It has done so well. Google. They carry the market. Now, you ready for this? This is just a stunning statistic to me. I mean, just blows my mind. 94% of the stocks, 94, have returns that are no higher than cash for the last 50 years. I just can't believe. So you were talking about, you know, less than 10% of the stocks carry the entire index to 10% returns on average every year of your life, on average. It never comes close to 10. It's up 20, it's up 30, it's down 20. It averages 10, though, over the long term. But it's the 6% of the stocks that do that. Just what Warren Buffett's talking about. Greatest investor of all time can't just find those six. Can't. We're wrong most all of the time. Yet we keep doing this. We keep predicting what the market's going to do. Oh, I think this, I think that. Oh, my. It's what we do. And it's 100% wrong. That's what Buffett, Templeton, Michael Price, Peter Lynch told us. Peter Lynch put it a little different. He said, you've got to have some 10 baggers in your portfolio to do well. Huh. Okay, well, a 10 bagger, it maybe goes without saying, but I want to make sure everybody's on the same page, is the stock that goes up tenfold from what you bought it. Not tomorrow, not this year. Once again, over time. A company finds a key. Great management, whatever it is, right? They've studied, and there's never one key, right? It's not, oh, the key to success is this, oh my gosh, you know, or you know, good to great, all the books like that, which turn out to be like, oh yeah, those companies failed right after the book came out. There isn't a magic formula, but something happens, and when they keep that and turn it into a dominant thing, a cash flow machine, if you will, and you hold, and you don't listen to buy, 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 sell, 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 then you own a company that turns into a 10-bagger or 20-bagger. Apple, a 40-bagger since the iPhone came out. That's how it happens. All right. Well, I think we probably better take a break. Something's weird going on here. So our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number if you'd like to join us. Sorry for the quick leave there. It was very weird, but I heard voices in my phone, and I thought they were going over air. Anyway, we've got that technical problem fixed, we believe. But that's the beauty of live, isn't it? Anything and very strange things do happen over all these years I've been doing it. It's pretty crazy. At any rate, I was pretty wound up. I am wound up about this whole thought process of how wrong we are and that it doesn't matter. It's okay. You know, I've often thought about if you could avoid some of the really, I guess I would call them obviously bad plays. Right? The obviously bad companies, like, let's say, automobiles. If you never owned an automobile manufacturer in the past 40 years, you did really good. I mean, it's good to avoid them, right? How about steel? Another one. Good not to own. Oh, what about Nucor and blah, blah, blah? Yeah, well, pretty mediocre. Not a big deal. Not U.S. Steel bad, but not good. Airlines constantly being bankrupted. It's like constant. I mean, here's what you want in the world, right? You want to sell software because it has the highest margins in the world, right? You figure it out. You have a lot of R&D. You get it all figured out, and then what happens, right? You just get to keep minting money, right? It's print money, money-making machine. Boom, 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 boom. Think Windows or whatever else, right? Lots of money spent in the development, almost no money spent to send it to you. And the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. So what's the world's worst industry? How about one that's capital intensive all the time? I mean, like, you got to buy big airplanes. How about one that's controlled by labor unions and you got lots of employees? Like airlines, right? And one that has very high cyclicality with energy costs, like airlines. Three strikes and you're out. If you had avoided those, that's good. You say, well, what about Southwest? Yeah, I know. It was good until it wasn't. Constant. Constant. And all of the bankruptcies that were there, my goodness gracious, just take capital and destroy it. Just blow it up. And I think about that, about if you had, like, wouldn't it improve your odds of doing well just to ignore the companies? But in spite of those companies, in spite of what is obvious, then in the auto industry, you wind up with a Tesla. And you might say, well, it's really a technology company. That's true. It's a battery company. That's true, too. It's a tech company. I get it. But they make cars. What other bucket are you going to put it in? Sometimes the obvious isn't obvious. And in spite of it, you have done 10% a year because of a small number of home runs. That's stunning to me. And it ought to be something that puts us, frankly, very much at ease about our own investing, about not having to be so super right. Just be in the game and you're super right. Just be in the game. And you win. That's it. You don't have to figure things out. You don't have to figure out the future because you won't. You'll be so wrong, it's embarrassing. But you won't stop doing it if you start doing it. Everybody does it. It's human nature. It's who we are. I think this is going to happen. I think Ron DeSantis is going to win. I think the Democrats are going to win. I think it's going to be Trump versus this, blah, 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 blah. And all of this is important how? It's not. It's a game that we seem to play, and in many ways it has absolutely no consequence at all. I mean, it does. I mean, it does matter if Trump's in because Republicans will lose. That's my opinion. I might be wrong. But he loses every election except the one in 2016. So I'm going to go with the stat that he's going to lose. We lose again. Okay? So I think that's reasonable to say that's my prediction and it doesn't really matter because it doesn't. It's not going to be what I want. It's going to be what it is. And me predicting it is nothing to do with the economy, the markets, my life. Nothing. Nothing. It's a prediction. And when we take that and we start predicting markets, oh man, why? Why do that? Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't play. When you catch yourself doing that, remind yourself. I do this all the time. I catch myself going, oh, I don't think the market's very good. You know what I think? I think the market's going to fly. Why? Because I'm wrong most of the time. That's honestly true. We have to all have that self-talk. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't. And I think I'm a pretty smart guy. And I do study the markets. I really do. I really think deeply about the markets, not just data. I certainly don't sit around and watch CNBC and think, now that's insightful. No, it's not insightful. It's stupid. It's stupid babble. But I do think deeply about the markets. I like to think deeply about the markets. I like to talk to really good strategists broadly, high level, about the markets. But I'll tell you an honest discussion that happened literally last week. Because we have Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, blah, 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 all the people, they come through. They want us to use their products. They come in, buy us lunch, sit down, tell us about some product that we're using to update us. Maybe throw out a couple new ideas. Anything else? Do you want to hear about our strategists, what our strategists are saying right now? And this last one hasn't come in for a long, long time, pre-COVID, literally. Okay? And so they're kind of introducing some changes in how things are operating. It's an ETF company. And, you know, do you want to hear about, you know, what we're thinking about interest rates, the debt ceiling, and the markets? And I said, no, I don't. I said, I don't mean to be condescending here, but I don't really care what your opinion is. I'd like to just know, generally, what products and niches fit. You're going to sound exactly like J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs. Your opinion is going to be blah, blah, blah. And it's not going to be right. It's never right. Not never. I shouldn't say that. It's right less than a coin flip. Why would I care? I don't. So tell me something that is helpful and unique to your firm. Don't tell me what your strategists say, because that has no worth. And he was just taken aback. And I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm just saying, let's not waste our time here let's go ahead and go to what you might be able to help us understand better and use. That's all. True story, happened this week. That's what we do to try to dial back the noise. And believe me, we have people we like to listen to. We do. First Trust is one of them. Brian Westbury is a phenomenal economist, not afraid at all to go out on a limb. In fact, so much so that CNBC won't have him on. Just won an award for being the most right, most correct economist. Stunningly good. And it's not just him. He's got a whole big, giant team, and he'd be the first person to tell you that. Stunning. There are people we listen to, but not for prediction, not for precision, for direction, for big picture. What is the overall impact? And when it comes to economists, they weren't even afraid to wade into the COVID pool. Why? Because they're economists. They deal with data. They sort through data. It's what economists do. All of those things. The big picture. We find people like that, yes, that have been, not just because they predict the future, they have been very right because they take a big picture view. Not a finite little, well, we think the market's here, we should be in value stocks, we need to be in growth stocks. What you're telling me has already occurred. That's real helpful. Value stocks did really, really good in 2022. Therefore, let's extrapolate forward and sound really smart in a whole big bunch of words how value stocks are going to do really good in 2023. And now that they're not, let's explain it away as to that it's just AI. It's a new tech thing. And so everything from Meta using AI and Google is such a huge thing. And then we explain away why in this year, the NASDAQ is up 24%. The Russell growth. This is 1,000. You take the Russell 2, you take the Russell 3,000, you divide it up in half. Half the companies are growth, half are value, based on dividends, PE ratios, sales, book value, all that. That's what it is. Everybody knew coming into this year that value was the king of 22. Now, growth was the king of every year for the past zillion years. And over the last 10 years, cumulatively, it's growth. But not 2022. And now it was the turnaround. Everybody knew. This is what all the strategists, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, they're all coming. So we really like value stocks. We really, really like what already went up a lot. So let me repeat one, and then we're going to pretend we really were on top of that. We started the year 2022 shorting the growth and buying value. That's how smart we are. No, they weren't. No, they didn't. They didn't do that. They didn't do that at all. And that's what's really important to understand. Now, value, year to date, in an up market now, mind you, is down. It's down. Growth is up 21%. 21. Carrying the overall market up 10. Pretty remarkable. Really helpful to talk to strategists and figure out what's going to happen, huh? Because you'd have loaded up on value, got rid of that crummy growth. Because that was yesterday's news. Happens every single day, all day long, especially on CNBC. Oh, I don't hate CNBC. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying this is just absolute nonsense. Bye, bye, bye. Sell, sell, sell. Growth over value, value over growth, whatever. Yesterday's news regurgitated over and over. All right, we got to take a quick break. Again, isn't this stunning? Maybe it's just me. 6% of the stocks carry the market? Only 6. We're wrong so much. And it's so totally okay. We'll be right back.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number. If you would like to ring us up.
Again, stunning week to me. Stunning year. But it's funny, as I get older, don't think as well, blah, blah, blah. You do think about things in a bigger context, right, than a day-to-day. And I realize, of course, that it's always weird, because predicting the future is an impossibility, of course. I've talked about that endlessly today. But it is something we do, we try to do. And in one sense, it's, of course we do. We try to predict what companies are going to do well, what industries are going to do well. And gosh, we're a lot better about that, about the broad strokes. But what we miss with all of this, it's important, because it's the world is so full of negativity, right? Digital currency is going to wipe out the world. Okay. U.S. dollar is in decline. Iran and China and Russia are getting together to create a new global currency. What's going to happen when they do that? These are like, you're asking me what happens when the crime families of, you know, Miami get with the ones in Chicago and get with the crime families in L.A. and they are going to do what? Take over the world? No. Suddenly everybody's going to go, you know, I like them better. I trust them more than the government. You know, because criminals can be trusted really no problem. I mean, we just lose all sense of common sense, I think. I don't know how else to phrase it. I don't want to say people are dumb, because it's just like without any common sense sometimes. We just want to worry. And so we go there, and it's and there's perfectly zillions of people out there that just can really help push people that direction. And there's always a comma, yeah, but, right? Yeah, comma, but. Okay, now, okay, I know. It's always worked out before. I know the market always does 10% all the days of our life. Yeah, but. And we do that all the time. So we don't, and we simply sit back and go, oh, well, you know, it's like, you know, it's, oh, that guy over there, it's optimistic, you know. That's Pollyanna. Hey, yeah, just a Pollyannish view. No. The only realism is optimism. Being optimistic about the world, about technology solving our problems. So I was taught, you were taught, if you're 60 years old, in junior high, we watch film strips. I know, you have to watch an old movie to see those anymore. Film strips that taught us and showed us pictures of our future, of the orange world we were going to live in. Huh? And they still do it today. Climate change, we're all going to die. This is going to be done in 10 years. It was 20 years ago when Al Gore told us that. It's irretrievable over the next 10 years. They tell us that every day. L.A. with I don't know how many more millions of people live there. How many hundreds of thousands or millions of cars more there are. It was smoggy. I remember visiting it as a child, 12 years old, sitting in the back of a car. Going to the tar pits and all those places in L.A., it was smoggy. It's not anymore. What I'm saying is a dose of optimism. We all need that. The greatest investors all have an optimistic perspective. So when you hear somebody that's all pessimistic about something, ignore it. Ignore it. We need to be optimistic. We solve our problems. We really do. We really do. Yeah, but I know. Maybe not this time. Maybe not this time. The big bet. I just don't think you can own stocks. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why you would own stocks. Yeah, I don't know why either. I don't know why you would own something you don't have to do anything with. You're not required to do a darn thing. They won't let you on the property if you show up to help out. You never have to put more money in. You can't just go and give them more money, not unless they're selling stocks or bonds. You can't. But you're most certainly never required to. Well, but what if the tenant leaves? That's the company's problem. I mean, it doesn't guarantee results, but, you know, overall, collectively, the small fraction of companies that do incredibly well carry us to a lifetime of 10% returns. Nothing else is even close. I know why you – I do. I get why you don't want to own that. Why would you? Goodness gracious. Frightening, huh? I mean, you might be required to do nothing. You might have the highest returns on the planet. You might have instant liquidity anytime you want to get your money out, to go spend and go do something else, like every day, every business day. Frightening. Yeah, I can see why. We want to analyze and figure out why the U.S. dollar is going to collapse from Russia, Iran. I get it. The world's upside down. It's terrible. It is. Boys aren't boys. Girls aren't girls. It's just so weird. It's fine. You know, I don't care if somebody wants to cross dress or whatever, but don't do it with my kids. I mean, they're confused enough. That's all. I just think that's kind of like normal. Okay? It's not lacking of acceptance. And I know you feel the same way. And that's what we're told. So it's hard. But that has nothing to do with how many iPhones Apple will sell this quarter. Nothing. And let's not conflate the two. Don't do it. Leave it be. They're different. Different. Completely different. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. We've got to take our final break. We've got plenty of time on the other side. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. Let's go ahead and jump on that phone. Terry, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, Professor. You were talking about stupid people, and I just looked across the room at a sign I picked up on one of my trips. It says, never underestimate stupid people in large groups.
That's a good one. I like that. I like that very much.
Keep that in perspective here. Didn't really have much about finances, although you're doing a good enough job on that, but I just wanted to put out there about Memorial Day. Is how we get to do all the fancy investing and whatnot and have a good life that we have. And I just wanted to wish people out there a solemn Memorial Day.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, Terry. I do. I read a Steve Jobs email, and he was talking about in that in greater detail, actually very eloquent. I'll try to grab that for next week because it is a good reminder for us. And that is that we are not here on our own. And he was pointing out, I did not invent the components of an iPhone. I didn't invent the screen. I didn't invent the microchip. Somebody else did. Somebody else gave us an education. Somebody else we learned from and built upon. Everything we have is from people who came before us. And Memorial Day is a great reminder of that and a great reminder of all the lives lost protecting what we take for granted today, our freedom. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you brought up Steve Jobs, of course. I take it back to a lighter side here. I just found a new genre of music, klezmer music, Jewish folk tunes and whatnot, the clarinet and the fiddle and whatnot. And Steve Jobs should have still made his iPods bigger. I need more rooms, but...
Yeah, you should.
Sorry.
There you go again. There you go again.
But anyway, I just wanted to go ahead and give people. It struck me last year. What do you say on Memorial Day? Happy Memorial Day is not the idea of what the day is for. So Decoration Day.
It really is.
So
yeah. Yep, it's a day to stop and contemplate the people that came before us and the great lives they gave us. So, absolutely.
I'm going to get my stuff halfway together here and go visit my late golf partner and curse him out a little bit for. But
that's good. Enjoy it. Thank you for the reminder, Terry.
All right, David. We'll talk to you later.
And a solemn Memorial Day to you. Thanks now. And our number is we don't have time now. We're going to run out of time. That's a good reminder for all of us. It really is. I'm going to say happy Memorial Day in the sense of remembering people. And although it's solemn, it's also happy memories too, right? Happy memories. All right. You know, this is funny. I just got this email here about Target, right? Target, the company Target. And it certainly is a target right now of the anti-woke. And in fact, the company has taken great fire and should. Whenever companies just become super woke, it's like, what do you expect? Not everybody thinks it's really a great idea to come up with swimsuits for little boys so they can hide their genitalia. I mean, seriously, we're talking little boys. Crazy.